From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made tonight on WXXI-TV when a remarkable documentary called Autism in Love airs. And I say remarkable because I've had the chance to watch it. It tells the story of four people with autism who are trying to find love. And they are in what you would probably call very different places on the spectrum. And they are encountering love in very different ways. The most heartbreaking is the story of Lenny, a young man in California who knows he has autism. He wants love. He wants a relationship with respect. You might even say a relationship with chivalry. But he repeatedly struggles. He struggles not only in finding love, but with who he is. And here he is finally talking to the filmmaker. This is Lenny talking about what he wishes he could change.
I wish I was not autistic. There, I'm gonna say it right now. I don't like it. Makes me different. I don't like it. I wish I could have been a normal person. I would rather be a normal man than be an autistic person with $1 million. If God came up to me and says, what do you want? I don't want to be autistic anymore. I wish you can give me a new me. I could start my life all over again and I wasn't autistic. I bet you all the damn people I knew in middle school and high school, they're all in freaking college now. I'm not in college. That's what I wanted when I was in high school. I dreamed of going to college, and I'm not in college. I think now I should have graduated college. I know so many people that went to college, and they're done right now. I can't hang out with people like that. I can't.
Why not?
Because they're higher than me. Look, they're up here. I'm down here. I got no job. I got no car. I'm living with my parents. I should be doing something. I'm a good person, man. I'm not a bad person, man. I'm a good guy. That's just... It hurts. It hurts, man.
That is Lenny. And I just have to confess, I mean, I wanted to open with that because I was watching that film last night just moved to tears, listening to this young man tell his story, and you just heard it. And you'll see more of Lenny's story, among several others, as part of Autism in Love tonight on WXXI-TV at 10 p.m. Now, this conversation this hour is part of WXXI's Dialogue on Disability. It's a partnership with the L. Siegel Community of Agencies and the Golisano Foundation. We're going to be having conversations throughout the week in this community through the Dialogue on Disability. But let's start right there. Let's start with this film and what autism and love truly means. Let me welcome my guests for the hour. Carolina Grappa is on the phone with us. She's a producer of Autism in Love, and I just have to thank you for being here. It was a really remarkable film. Great work on this, and thanks for taking the time for us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and, you know, me being representative of the team with you guys right now. Great.
Well, let me also welcome our guests in studio. Katie McGowan is here, an autism coordinator for Happiness House. Katie, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Also here is Rachel Rosner, Director of Education and Support for Autism Up, and she's the mother of two young adults on the autism spectrum. Rachel, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And also here is Lori Jean Pelequin. Dr. Pelequin is a clinical psychologist specializing in working with individuals with autism and their families for more than 30 years. And Dr., nice to have you as well.
Thank you.
Let me ask my guests in studio before I even go to someone who's involved with the film. Did you not feel like I did? My heart is breaking for Lenny, just hearing his story. And, you know, his is not the only one in the film, but that was the one that shook me up the most because he's so cognizant of the challenge. And he is a good guy. You could just see it that he wants to be respectful and he's courteous about the way he treats women. He's courteous about sex. He's courteous about all these things. And yet he's struggling so much. And let me just kind of go around the table. And Rachel, I'll start with you. How did you feel in watching Lenny's story, for example?
As the parent of an almost 18-year-old with autism, just heartbreaking to watch him go through that anywhere, let alone on camera. I feel so sorry that Lenny is the age that he is, because over the last several years, the neurodiversity movement has emerged, and that wasn't there for people with autism, their families, their friends. When he was growing up, that support, that mindset that people who are neurodiverse, people with autism and other related disorders, disabilities, are not better or worse, just different.
I want to just reach through and tell him, yeah, you're different, man, but you're not lesser. I mean, he's saying, they're up here and I'm down here. And that crushed me watching him say that. I mean, it's because, Rich, as you say, you know, we've come so far in understanding, but he doesn't feel that. He obviously doesn't. It's got to be devastating for his mother. And, you know, as mother yourself, is that difficult? You know, that's not your child, but that must be difficult.
Absolutely. And I think there's a big difference between understanding and truly accepting for people out in the community, friends, community members, teachers, therapists, but also for the person themselves. To understand what your diagnosis is and what it means is one thing. To accept it and to learn how to make your own best life is extremely difficult for anyone. For a person with a neurodevelopmental disability, it adds so many other layers. It just adds to the complication.
Katie, what was that like for you watching Lenny's story?
It was really challenging for me, knowing that I've contacted with parents in several different settings, that his story is not necessarily unique, that a lot of individuals are struggling to accept themselves. And something that Rachel said was, you know, create their own best life. And we need to model how to do that and how to help individuals be successful in that way. So, you know, it was challenging to watch. And I actually thought he did a wonderful job of kind of explaining his feelings, which a lot of individuals struggle with. And having that glimpse in was really very touching.
That's a great point. You say a lot of individuals. How about the individuals in this film, person to person, have different levels of ability in expressing their feelings? And Lenny is not struggling to express his feelings. I agree with you. At least that is something that he can articulate. But I just want happiness for him. You know, I mean, I've never met this guy. I just want him to not feel this way. And Lori, I mean, how do we? If you work with someone like Lenny, what do you say? How do you work through that?
Well, one of the challenges for Lenny, I think, is that he got diagnosed very late in life, and so he didn't have the advantage of early intervention. He didn't have the advantage of all of the supports that we now put into place in grade schools and the kinds of therapeutic interventions. For example, I start working with kids as young as a year old, and he didn't have that advantage. And so one of the advantages is we identify kids earlier and get them help earlier. The other is that, you know, where he lives and the circumstances, he really doesn't have enough supports. And he's struggling, caught between worlds in a sense. And we have some of that even in this community of people being part of the developmental disability world, but also part of the mental health world. And clearly, Lenny had severe depression. He was hospitalized at least on one occasion. I think, Caroline, I think you said before that he was hospitalized a second time. There's a lot of additional factors for him. But the fact is that depression is very high among young people, teenagers and young adults with autism spectrum disorder. And so Lenny's story is not unique, although as you said before, he was particularly articulate about it, and in some ways that made it harder to watch.
I agree. Well, let's turn the conversation to Carolina, who's on the phone with us, producer of Autism and Love, which you can watch tonight on WXXI-TV. And by the way, again, this conversation is part of the Dialogue on Disability and Dialogue on Disability Week, a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series, Dialogue on Disability, supported in part by the Golisano Foundation, with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. Carolina, the film tells the story of Lenny and also tells the story of Stephen in St. Paul. And Stephen is maybe a little bit more limited in what he is able to express, I think is at least fair to say. Dave and Lindsay are a couple both on the spectrum themselves in Washington, D.C., They've got a fascinating story. How did you go about creating this film and identifying which stories in particular you wanted to tell?
Yeah, you know, it's actually really tricky. Over the course, we shot the film in 2013, and we were in production. And so over the course of that year, we ended up following about 9 different people or storylines. And of those, only the 4 that you see on screen were the ones that ended up. So, you know, editorializing and making those decisions were very tricky, but we wanted to stay true to our thesis of exploring this idea of romantic love. And so while other stories were just as fascinating, they didn't necessarily fit that mold that we were trying to create, you know, this narrative, this arc of these 3 characters in different places in their romantic lives and different places on the spectrum. And so everybody came to us in different ways. Lindsay and Dave had been profiled on Glamour magazine, I think it was in 2009. So we found them and found them very interesting. And so they quickly reached out to them and, you know, said, do you guys want to be involved? It's been different from a magazine. We're going to be with you for a year. And they were very eager to participate. And Lenny came to us through some contacts in Los Angeles local to us. And Stephen was actually a friend of a friend's cousin, one of those kind of stories in St. Paul. So everyone sort of came in different ways, and in ways we could have never predicted. Very serendipitous, in my opinion, how all these stories and all these people were placed in our path, and also the trust that they gave us to come into their lives, which is a very intimate space for anybody, yeah, with or without an autism diagnosis, and to trust us and let us come in and, you know, be such an intimate part of their lives during a time where so much happened in these people's lives is still something that I can't wrap my head around, because we could never have planned that the way that it panned out.
What's the short description for why you wanted to make the film in the first place, Carolina?
Well, I'm a huge fan of stories that take you into a place in a safe way of exploring, you know, someone else's life, someone else's journey. And I think documentaries in today's day and age with Netflix and all that, it really has become the sort of modern journalism, and it gives people access into a world otherwise unknown that isn't a narrative story. And so I saw this need of, well, these kids are going to grow up, and what's going to happen when these kids grow up and have these desires and these conversations need to be had. And so we saw that there was a deficit in the sort of autism research side of things, and that's really what compelled me to get behind the project with my executive producer, Ira Hailvale, who's been, you know, in the autism field for 20-plus years, and it sort of just grew from there.
And true to life, without giving too much away, one of the stories has a kind of a happy ending, one has a kind of a sad ending, and one has sort of an untold story going forward. There's still kind of kind of questions about what happens next. And that's life. You know, there's happiness, there's sadness, there's mystery. But I'm also curious to know, maybe what we can do is let's listen to another clip from the film. I want to talk a little about Lindsay and Dave, if we could, because Lindsay is the, I guess I would call, I don't want to use language that's inappropriate, I think the most highly functioning, or, you know, everyone in the room's kind of looking at me like, what's the terminology here? Help me out, everyone in the room. We're familiar with the characters in the film. Lindsay is, Rachel, how would you describe?
I think that's the best terminology we've got.
You didn't seem to like it.
We don't like it.
there's really not a great alternative, unfortunately. I think that for any person, with autism in particular, there are lots of areas where they might be high functioning, lots of areas where they might be low functioning simultaneously. So for lack of better terminology, which we don't have right now, high functioning is it in this instance.
Okay.
Or closest to neurotypical.
Closest to neurotypical. Oh, you like that better. Rachel likes that better. Okay. So, but Lindsay would be the one who's closest to neurotypical in the group. She is dating Dave, and they've been together quite a while, and both have autism, both certainly very, very well aware of it, and are actually, I thought, fascinatingly in touch with how it informs their view of themselves and their view of love. And, you know, Lindsay is this fashionista. She's a beautiful woman. She's really sort of self-possessed, but she still struggles with some of this. And I want to listen to Lindsay in the film talking about accepting herself. Let's listen.
Different. Even before I was informed of my diagnosis of autism, though I always felt like I was an odd character outside of my peers. But I didn't really understand why. I would often get turned away or people would ignore me, and I thought, well, what am I doing wrong? It's still very difficult for me to find acceptance of myself. I have just learned how to be a good actress.
I thought she was fascinating because I only saw what was presented in the film, but here's this woman who's beautiful, she's very fashionable, very intelligent, speaks very, very fluidly and I think articulately. And maybe for average person who meets her on the street might not obviously think this is someone with autism, but she's very self-possessed about it. And I wonder if this makes it more difficult. So Carolina, does this make it more difficult for someone like Lindsay to find love because, she obviously has these feelings about herself or concerns about herself, but when she meets people day to day going through life, they may not have a full understanding of what it means for her autism. I thought that was so interesting.
Sure. I mean, I think it's, I'm not an autism expert by any means, but I think it's like anything, it's a different type of challenge to go through the day having to translate, like she mentions in the documentary. She has to receive information and process it, and she's, through her therapy, made that process for her so seamless that we don't see it happening, but it's still very difficult for her. And she was nonverbal when she was a child, so you take someone like that and you compare it to someone like Steven in the documentary, who is less communicative, has more of the typical sort of idea. When people think of autism, he's more the one that's more visually affected by it. And who's to say who has the harder time or the easier time? And it really, autism is so different. It affects everybody so differently that it's tricky to say.
I found myself, my emotions about their relationship kept shifting throughout the film because I'm looking at Lindsay and Dave going, come on, Dave, let's go, man. If there's not a ring, if you don't put a ring on it, you're going to lose this. And, so there's certainly drama as it goes throughout there. And to your credit, by the way, Carolina, I don't think it was at all ever assured one way or another which way it was going to go. And as I said, there's a happy ending, there's a sad ending, and there's sort of an untold ending, and I won't reveal what happens with Lindsay and Dave until you watch the film tonight. But I think you told the film in a way, you told the story in the film in a way that was authentic without being cheap for drama. I really admired that about it. There was a moment where Dave said to Lindsay, I'm not comfortable having this conversation on camera. Dave was not the emoter. Lindsay was, let me tell you how I'm feeling. And Dave's going, okay, but I'm watching the weather here. I've got things to do.
Yeah.
But when he finally starts to kind of uncover his own emotions, there is a moment in the film where he basically says, I can't do this on camera. And I thought that's where it was a reminder to me. They're not just playing this up for the camera here. This is real. So let's listen to Dave talk about love and physics. A lot of the times when he was relating his feelings about love and relationships, it was in relationship to some of his work, his knowledge, his study. I thought that was very interesting. His formula for love, in a different clip that you're not going to hear here, his formula for love was L plus P plus 2T, looks plus personality plus two times how someone treats you. That's equal to the other two. And that was his formula. I thought that was very interesting. But this is Dave talking about love.
In physics, we have something called electromagnetic spectrum. How much energy a wavelength has? You go from radio waves to light to ultraviolet, X-rays, gamma rays. And then how we feel towards someone is kind of on a similar scale. You have different wavelengths. Going from this physical lust, then you go graduate from a general interest in the opposite sex, then you graduate from having a specific intense crush on a specific person. And after that, it kind of evolves into another stage, which is the true love stage. You're not having that deep crush where you're thinking about her 24/7 and you have a hard time sleeping because you're so much in love with her. But it kind of graduates into a more subconscious form. Let's say you're going from light waves that you can visibly see to ultraviolet waves. They're still there, but you can't see them, but they're stronger.
I thought that was so interesting, and a lot of smiles around this table, sort of knowing smiles among our panel. So let me ask why you're smiling. Rachel Rosner, the Director of Education and Support with Autism Up, why the big smile?
I think that he has done such a wonderful job of being able to articulate how he feels in a way that makes sense to him. I think we all do that. We use our own life experience, our own areas of expertise to interpret our lives. And I think not only has he done that well for himself, but I think he's done it pretty well for all the rest of us, too.
Okay. Let's go around the table. Lori, same question.
You know, he relates to the world in that way. And he's comfortable with himself. And I think that was one of the things that was so great about it is, you know, Dave has mm-hmm. a lot of tics, and he has a lot of things that make him stand out in a way, but he comes through in different ways as a partner, and he is there for Lindsay in ways, and so his articulation of it is really wonderful, and I think it speaks to how when we can enter into the world of people who have autism and we understand their metaphors, we understand the way that they think about things, and it's often very beautiful, it's often poetic, and it's often a different way of seeing the world that can be truly remarkable. And I think that he helps us see that is worth our time for other people with autism, of finding how they think instead of keeping on asking them to think like us. Mm-hmm. Because when you think like them, you learn some really amazing things.
Katie?
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly with that. One of the other things that kind of made me smile about it was he made it very tangible in a way for Lindsay. And I thought it was interesting throughout the movie kind of how they recognized each other's way of communicating and really mm-hmm. worked to understand that. And yeah. I think that speaks to us as practitioners and just human beings, is that we really need to work to understand where the other is coming from. And, you know, a lot of times throughout the movie, I'd be watching and thinking, this is a typical relationship issue as well. And so it was nice to hear his view and kind of gain access into how he views love.
To be clear, when a woman is trying to express something sort of emotional and important, and a man is trying to watch TV, that is not just related to autism.
You are right.
But what I do think was really interesting was Lindsay at times talked about, you know, do you date someone who's on the spectrum or not? And I think she obviously had an understanding for her boyfriend's sort of idiosyncrasies, because she's on the spectrum and she's very introspective about her own, and she can look at him and say, instead of getting angry, saying, listen, I need more, she would sort of pull back and say, that is who he is. So let me just, Carolina, I got to let you go in a minute. I know you're short for time, but I will say this. You know, I said earlier, there was a big question in my mind. Is he going to put a ring on it or not here? And throughout the film, I'm wondering, that's either going to happen, or she is going to tell him, I can't wait forever. It's been 8 years and it's over. And if this is going to get, unfortunately, really sad. The other possibility was that it was going to be sort of this stasis, this, well, you know, she was going to kind of settle that she might not get everything she wants from him, but she loves him. He loves her, and that was better than looking for anything else. And so I thought it was really, really interesting. And my last question for you before I let you go is this. When you're working with this couple on, and they know they're on camera, are you cognizant as a filmmaker that something very, very big in their lives could definitely happen? It could happen on camera. They could break up on camera. It could be devastatingly awful. Who knows? They could get engaged. Other things. Do you go throughout that process knowing that you almost feel like we're kind of let in on the secrets here? And how do you kind of delicately handle that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't actually participate with too much of the filming since they were out of town. They weren't local to us, but you know, you are. You're an active part of their lives for 9 months. Even if the cameras aren't rolling, you know, there is still that constant contact with what's going on and how is everything going and when are we coming back to film. And then when you come back to film, it's settling in with them and becoming one with their lives and their routines. And so there is that sort of fear and that anticipation of it's day to day, it's real life. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and that is exhilarating but also terrifying. But I, you know, I'm very grateful to the people that have been involved in the film and all of our subjects for trusting us to come in and for trusting Matt specifically, you know, to be in their lives for so long, for so many private and special moments, and that we were able to capture and now share with a bunch of people. And hopefully that'll help bring awareness, help start conversations about this topic, and hopefully really show that we are more alike than different. You know, that there's this desire to segregate and label and know because we're like this and you're like that with about anything you can think of in our world and the history of mankind. And I think this is, for me, what this film has done on a personal level is just shown me how we are so much more alike than we think. And there's so much more, there is so much to learn from them on relationships and on love. And that's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Look at some of the feedback that's been coming in. We've been hearing it in anticipation of the showing of Autism and Love tonight on WXXI-TV. PBS has been hearing it. Stephanie writes, I'm very excited to watch this. I myself am high-functioning ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder, and dating is so incredibly hard. Rachel writes, I cannot wait to watch this. I have autism. My boyfriend and I are going on 7 years together now. I consider myself to be extremely lucky. I managed to find a man who not only accepts my differences, but loves me because of them. He thinks my oddities, quirks, and challenges are just extremely cute. That really takes a special type of person. No one else in my life has ever been able to do this. And Shawneen writes, I'm so excited to learn more about this. I was hoping that someone would create a dating site for people with autism. My son is highly functional and oftentimes is very depressed, saying that he is jealous that nobody wants to date him and he sees everyone else with girlfriends. I would love it if there were more opportunities for meetings in my area so that he could meet and hopefully fall in love with someone. That's just a small snapshot of the feedback that's been coming in. So Carolina, you've got a lot of people eager to see this tonight, WXXI-TV tonight, and across the country. And Carolina, thank you so much for taking the time to join the program today. Good luck with Autism and Love. And,
thank you.
I know it will be a success.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's get a short break, and we're going to come back and continue the conversation with our guests in studio. Katie McGowan is here from Happiness House. Dr. Lori Jean Peliquin is a clinical psychologist. Rachel Rosner is here from Autism Up, and we're talking about the film, Autism and Love. We're talking about what love means for people with autism in various ways. There's not a single answer to that question. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how these various organizations and the people in our studio help when the question comes up. I've got a child with autism. I want them to find love. What can we do? How do we move forward? What have we learned? You know, what are their resources? You know, all those things. So all of that and more next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we'll talk to leadership in the Monroe County Legislature and new leadership. Term limits have pushed some party leaders out for Republicans and Democrats. We'll meet the people who are taking their place, trying to lead the county forward. Then second hour, we continue the dialogue on disability. It's all coming up Tuesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Just a moment ago, read some of the comments from people who are responding to the launch of Autism and Love tonight. It's not always easy to talk about, but if you want to talk, you can certainly do that. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. If you or someone you love has autism and you think about what love means and the challenges of love. Let me hit one more story from the film before we broaden the conversation, because the person we haven't talked about yet in the film is Steven. And Steven is a person who presents more neuroatypically. I'm trying to look for language that Dr. Peliquin
would
tell me.
More like classic autism.
Classic autism. This is someone who Steven is has been in love with Gita, someone he's known for a long time, but Gita, as we learn in the film, has cancer. And so this is Steven talking to the filmmakers about the definition of love, Gita, and what love is to him.
I met Gita 20 years ago. It was on February 7th, 1993.
What day of the week was that?
It was on a Sunday.
What did you say to her when you first met her?
Hello.
And what did you think when you first met her?
It's nice. It was beautiful.
Are you in love with Gita?
Yes, I'm in love with Gita.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It means to fall in love, to give a kiss and a hug.
How do you know when you're in love?
I don't know.
And Stephen, you know, it's easy to feel so much affection for him and to root for him and Gita. And again, I won't give away what happens there, but, you know, let me ask our guests in studio. Many of our listeners know someone, maybe in their own family or circle of friends, who presents with autism the way Stephen does. And, you know, maybe some people are just, you know, surprised to even be thinking about love with someone like Stephen. But of course, we're all human beings, so I'll go around the table. Rachel Rosner, when it comes to love, someone like Stephen, we shouldn't be surprised that he can find and have a fulfilling, you know, interest in love, right?
Of course not. I think one of the things that, I guess for lack of a better word, the general public assumes that people with autism are, you know, six-year-olds running around in a 26-year-old's body. That's not the case. You know, my son is an almost 18-year-old man. He's not two or four or six. He has all of those same questions and feelings and complications as any young man who's about to turn 18. And I think that with all of the things that families that have a member with autism are dealing with, potentially the love life and romance gets pushed to the side. But whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, my son's going to be 18 and absolutely does have those thoughts and feelings and failed relationships.
Sure. And we meet Gita. And again, without giving away the fate of what happens in terms of her cancer and her battle against it, she does describe her relationship with Stephen. And she describes the fact that she says, I have a learning disability, but I can articulate my feelings better than he can. And she said, it's hard because I try to get him to talk a little bit more. But she said, I can see it in the way he looks at me. I can see it in the conversations that we do have. And that love is real. And I'm sure very valuable, even though he can't, we shouldn't think just because Stephen can't tell us in long sentences or paragraphs that there's not great value.
Absolutely. Just because someone can't express themselves properly doesn't mean, I take that back, not properly.
Typically.
In a way that we would expect.
Sure.
Or even just simply verbally, for that matter. It doesn't mean that they don't have those thoughts and feelings, doesn't mean that they don't have anything of value to say or express.
Okay. Lori?
And that love means different things to different people, neurotypical, autism, regardless. And that the relationship is what it is to those two people. And that assumptions shouldn't be made about what those relationships are. So, for example, there are individuals on the autism spectrum who are asexual and do not want to be in a relationship with someone. There are other individuals on the autism spectrum who very much want to have a sexual relationship with another person. People who are transgender and have autism, people who are gay and lesbian. So that it's not up to us to define what love means for other people, and that it can look very different for different people. There's a lot of people who might look at that Stephen and Gita's relationship and say, that's not the relationship that I would want. Fine. It worked for Gita and it worked for Stephen. And so I think it's important when we say autism in love, the title of the movie, that love is very many different things to different people, and to not judge based on what might work for each of us, which is true. You know, I have a lot of friends, and I don't think, you know, they'd want to be married to my husband, and I wouldn't want to be married to theirs, right?
Rachel just looked at you like, Lori, Play dead, Laura. You can't say that on the radio. No, you're saying we all can relate. I understand the point. And sometimes we project what we think we want for ourselves into what other people should want.
Exactly.
Which is probably
especially,
it's a perilous for anybody we know, but even more so with someone like Stephen. You know, that's we shouldn't project so much. I think that's a great message here. Katie, what do you think?
I agree very much with that. I mean, we... Just because a relationship doesn't look how we anticipate it does not mean that it isn't a valuable part of a person's life. You know, I think it's easy to judge, but we should try to hold back on that because everybody's relationship is their own. As to his ability to articulate it, I think you can't judge by that. I think that... John Elder Robison, is that mm-hmm. how you pronounce his name?
Yes.
He has said on several occasions that individuals with autism feel things very deeply, but don't have a way to explain it. And that often allows the general public to assume that they don't have anything to say about emotions and relationships. And that would be a horrible thing to assume, really.
Well, our conversation this hour is part of the Dialogue on Disability, and that's a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation, and it's a conversation that will continue all week long on our various platforms on WXXI. The film is Autism and Love, and it is on tonight on WXXI-TV, and seeing a number of comments come in online. Let me just read one here from Anna. It says, Evan, thank you so much for having this conversation. I'm so moved by what I'm hearing, and I look forward to the film tonight. I will just say that as a parent of a child with autism, the idea of love is intimidating for any parent, but especially for me. I fear broken hearts, lack of understanding, misunderstanding, and pain. And that is something that I unfortunately am not looking forward to. You know, that's just Anna being honest. You know, she's worried about lack of understanding.
Of course.
I think she hears of someone like Lenny's story and that you'll see in the film tonight. It's hard to watch. So we also heard from people who said, well, I wish there were resources. I don't know that there are resources now. We're all sitting around going, well, if there's not, there probably will be or should be. Right, Rachel? Would you be surprised if there's dating resources at least at some point for people with autism?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened sometime soon. But what I think has happened, at least locally and with Autism Up, is that as our kids have gotten older, the programs and services that we provide have changed. As the number of people with autism diagnoses has increased, so has the number of available services. And as those people get older, the variety of things that are open and available to older teens and adults with autism, spouses and significant others of people with autism will also grow and change and be added to.
Mm-hmm. Lori?
There's still a huge need in this community for young adults, especially for the kind of recreational activities that you need to be able to meet people. It's one thing for a neurotypical person to, for example, go on a dating service and say, you know, these are my likes and my dislikes. But to put it out there up front, oh, I have Asperger's, I have autism, that's going to be a very different kind of thing. And people on the spectrum often need very long periods of time to get to know people and to feel the trust and to accept. And so we have a huge need in this community for opportunities for people to meet other people on the spectrum and off the spectrum and not only have those things be segregated. So, yes, we need a lot more in the future. Mm-hmm. I know there was a meetup group for a while called Square Pegs in this community that were individuals with autism. And I don't know the state of that at the moment, but they were meeting to go to movies and things like that. So I'm hoping that maybe some of our listeners will take it upon themselves to try to come up with some ideas of ways of people to meet each other, because that's really what it's about. Just you got to get to know people.
Yeah, Kitty, you know anything that's currently out there?
Well, it's really hard to differentiate because there's social skills, but then we're talking about romantic love, and they kind of go hand in hand for me in a lot of ways, in terms of teaching some of those, teaching some of the skills. I mean, you think about flirting, what flirting looks like, you know, eye contact versus staring, looking away, those kind of intricacies need to be taught to some individuals. But how do you do that when you try to set up a social skills group? So, I mean, you know, CP Rochester offers a social group for 18 to 25-year-olds, which is wonderful. But looking more at the intricacies of romantic love is more of a challenge because there are thousands of unspoken, I hate to say rules almost, that, you know, I think they talk about in the movie The Social Antenna. If you have it, you kind of just pick up on these things around. But some of the discrete teaching that needs to take place in order to help individuals access that and, you know, find romantic opportunities.
Well, this is an important point there because Lindsay herself brought up, and Lindsay's father, I think, in interviews in the film. Mm-hmm. And if you're just joining us, the film is Autism and Love on WXXI TV tonight. Lindsay is someone with autism, the most neurotypical person in the film. And she and her father described when she was a young child not having those
social antenna,
not understanding a cue, the social cues as you go throughout life, which is surprising because when you see Lindsay, you would think she does, you know. And so let me ask a really ignorant question, and it comes from a really good place, but, you know, forgive the ignorance on this, but how much is it person by person with autism, or is there now a feeling that social antenna can be taught? Can it be learned? You know, because I don't want the premise of the question to imply that people with autism can't learn those things or are all the same, et cetera. But Lindsay is basically someone who looks to me in the film like, boy, she's learned a lot. If she truly was a child who had no social antenna, didn't understand cues, et cetera. So can that evolve and change? Lori?
Absolutely. Especially the earlier we start, when we work with children on reciprocity, on the back and forth, on their emotional development from the very early stages, it makes a huge difference in terms of what individuals are able to do. Lindsay clearly had a lot of therapy when she was young and clearly benefited from it. It's increasingly challenging as you get older to make changes. But those individuals who want to change and want to work at it, for example, Temple Grandin, who's probably the most famous person with autism that we know at the moment, who's made her career not only in designing cattle handling facilities, but in terms of letting the world know about autism. I first got to know Temple just by watching her on stage doing presentations, but I've had the opportunity over the years to meet her at a cocktail party, for example, and she's in her late 60s now, and she has made remarkable progress since she was 40 years old in her social skills, because she has set out to do that, and she made it happen. And so, yes, she's still an individual with autism, but there is no doubt that she has made remarkable progress, even as a middle-aged person. So,
and her story was told, I think did Claire Danes play her in the film?
Correct.
Because if you go to the Autism and Love website through PBS right now, it's interesting. They link to the way autism has been portrayed in film. And in some cases where Claire Danes is playing Temple Grandin, that's a real life story. In others, fictionally, everybody remembers Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man. And, you know, but the thing I think that is probably, you know, heartening when you look at that list is it's changing.
Yes.
It's not always the Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man. And I'm not disparaging that character, though I am curious to know if you feel like that was a helpful or hurtful portrayal. Was it accurate? Was it, you know?
There are individuals who are like
sure.
him. I think the good thing was it got autism into the mainstream. It got everybody to know there was such a thing. And at a time when people just didn't know much about it, I think the downside was that it led people to believe that all people with autism have these splinter skills and these savant skills. Mm-hmm. And that's true of some individuals with autism, but not all. And so for a while, people would talk, say, about how that was a problem because everybody expected them to have their whizzy skill that they could show off with. And if they didn't, then somehow people were disappointed.
Well, here's an email from Michael who just says, he says he has decided not to date. He says, my life is comfortable. I've decided not to date. There was always too much risk, too much struggle, and you might want to talk about risk of depression. And Michael, I appreciate that email. We did talk a little bit earlier this hour. Lori, you mentioned the risk of depression mm-hmm. of people with autism. And you know what? Let's listen to Lenny one more time because this is a good example, I think, of someone who clearly, when you see the film tonight, Lenny is somebody who, if I remember correctly in the film, he had a week in a facility, a care facility, because there was concern that he could hurt himself.
Correct.
He was so depressed about understanding that he has autism, struggling to build relationships. So again, this is Lenny, who you're going to see in the film tonight. Let's listen.
I wish I was not autistic. There, I'm going to say it right now. I don't like it. Makes me different. I don't like it. I wish I could have been a normal person. I would rather be a normal man than be an autistic person with $1 million. If God came up to me and says, what do you want? I don't want to be autistic anymore. I wish you can give me a new me. I could start my life all over again and I wasn't autistic. I bet you all the damn people I knew in middle school and high school, they're all in freaking college now. I'm not in college. That's what I wanted when I was in high school. I dreamed of going to college and I'm not in college. I think now I should have graduated college. I know so many people that went to college and they're done right now. I can't hang out with people like that. I can't.
Why not?
Because they're higher than me. Look, they're up here, I'm down here. I got no job. I got no car. I'm living with my parents. I should be doing something. I'm a good person, man. I'm not a bad person, man. I'm a good guy. That's just, it hurts. It hurts, man.
So Lori, he ends up, you know, they were concerned about him hurting himself. Mm-hmm. And I closed that film just wanting to know, where is he today? I want to just go give him a hug. I just feel so much for him. Does that look pretty classic like depression to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, hopefully we catch it sooner for individuals before they get to the point of wanting to hurt themselves or our fear about that and can get them the help that they need. I think Lenny had some challenges with that in terms of finances and availability of services. We struggle with that in our community of what psychologists and psychiatrists understand autism and the availability. We have a shortage of both in our community. And so that's one of the issues, is that we've had such an explosion of the numbers of individuals on the autism spectrum that we have not been able to keep up with mental health services.
One in, what's the number now? One in
45?
Yes.
One in 45?
Correct.
Wow.
And that's male and female. So if you just look at boys, which is 4 to 5 times, we're talking like one in 38, I think, the current numbers are.
Wow. I say wow just because, I mean, I can recall when it went from 1 in 100 to 1 to 88, 1 in 68, 1 in 45. Is the diagnosis now. And Michael just, you know, he's emailing the program to say he's just chosen to avoid the hurt.
I have people in my practice who have said the same thing, that they started trying to do dating. They had a negative experience and said, you know what? I just don't need that in my life. I can have a good life without that. I can develop friendships. I can have friendships with the opposite sex. But I am not going to put myself out there because it's just too scary.
Well, part of what you'll see tonight in Autism and Love at 10 o'clock on WXXI TV are these individual and remarkable stories. And you know what they say about people with autism. You meet one person with autism and you've met one person with autism. So it's not perfectly representative of an entire community of people, but they are touching stories. I think they're instructive and helpful, beautiful and at times heartbreaking, but I hope you watch tonight. And let me just close the hour with this. Part of the dialogue on disability is letting people know what's out there. So Rachel, for people out there who are going to be, you know, having children or having getting a diagnosis soon, just real briefly, 30 seconds, you'd want them to know about what resources or where to go to talk.
Want them just to know about Autism Up. We have a website full of links and resources, including links directly to me, and to our family navigator who deal daily with families and parents of newly diagnosed children. And also forgot to mention before our fabulous Adult Connections group. They meet on the third Wednesday of every month. They have a mutually agreed upon speaker and then time to share and support each other, specifically for people with autism who are 18 years and older and their parents are caregivers.
All right, Katie, real briefly here, 20 seconds, resources.
Okay, Happiness House has a family support group that meets twice a month. And you can contact me through our website and I can get you any resources that you may need to know more about our services. CP Rochester also has the dental clinic and
And what's the website?
It's www.cprochester.org and www.happinesshouse.org.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, Katie. It's great to talk to you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Lori, thank you so much. Rich, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, our thanks to the producer of the film Autism and Love. We heard from Carolina Grappa earlier this hour. And thanks for joining the conversation as well these 2 hours. Our thanks to our team helping produce this program. Valerie LaBanca, engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. Marielle Brinkerhoff, intern. I'm Evan Dawson, the host. And we'll talk to you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.